gathering stars in the meadow circled near an old oak tree. At the times appointed by the seasons of the earth and the phases of the moon, in the center often stood a woman equal with the others and respected for her work. One of the many we call the witches, the healers, and the teachers of the wisdom of the earth. The people grew through the knowledge she gave them, herbs to heal their bodies, spells to make their spirits whole. Hear them chanting healing incantations, calling forth the wise ones, celebrating in dance and song. There were those who came to power through domination, and they bonded in the worship of a dead man on a cross. They sought control of the common people by demanding allegiance to the Church of Rome, and the Pope declared the Inquisition. It was a war against the women whose power they feared. In this Holocaust against the nature peoples, 9 million European women died. And the tale is told of those who by the hundreds, holding together, chose their death in the sea while chanting the praises of the Mother Goddess. A refusal of betrayal, women were dying to be free.
Diana, Hecate of the Meter. Blessed Be. That was Charlie Murphy from an old, long ago, out of print album called Catch the Fire, The Burning Times. And everybody who's listening to this, welcome to a beautiful, beautiful Friday and another edition of Positively Revolting. It's almost time for the spring equinox. It'll be in another couple of days, and it'll be a good time to balance those eggs on end, you know? Supposedly you can do that any time of year, but I don't know. I've certainly had an easier time of it doing it at the spring equinox and the fall equinox, and besides, it's fun. So, my name is Melody Silverwolf, and I'll be joined in just a few moments by my lovely co-hostess, Ani Haynes. But between now and then, I've got a few announcements before we dive into our show today. We're going to talk all about theocracy and its threat to every thinking person of heart on this planet and what we're going to do about it. But first, I have quite a few announcements, so let's fly through these. There's about four of them here. Just a reminder, of course, on Sunday, 1:30, everybody's gathering in Waterfront Park around Oak Street for the big march, and there's a Women's Convergence and Feeder March. It starts at 12:15. It's gathering in the South Park blocks, Southwest Madison and Park in front of the Art Museum, and that's sponsored by Code Pink, and the Radical Cheerleaders will be there, along with Iman Ahmad Kamas, who is a Iraqi journalist and activist, and then they'll join up with the rest of the march. If you need any information or you want to volunteer, you can call Katie at 503-313-1884. And then, let's see here. Then you can hear Iman Ahmad Kamas speak Monday night at 7 o'clock at the First Unitarian Church in the Salmon Street Sanctuary. It's at 1011 Southwest 12th, of course. And it's sponsored by the American Friends Service Committee, Code Pink, and a whole bunch of other folks. And that will be a donation gathering. And she'll be speaking about her firsthand experience of the situation in Iraq. If you need more information about that, you can call 503-230-9427. That's Iman Ahmad Kamas speaking Monday night, 7 o'clock at the First Unitarian Church. Then we have the Struggle for Union, Democracy in Venezuela, first-hand experience building a new labor federation. You'll hear from Luis Primo, who is the regional coordinator of the UNT, and the Cross-Border Labor Organizing Coalition is bringing Luis to speak. That's going to be Sunday night at 7 at the United Brotherhood of Carpenters Local 247 Hall. That's at 2215 North Lombard. And excuse me, it's two blocks west of Denver. Denver, I can't even speak. And it says you enter under the neon sign on Brandon Street. That's sponsored by PCASC. And if you need more information on that one, 503-236-7916. Child care will be available there. Families are welcome. And finally, Mayan Women Weaving Resistance from Chiapas, Mexico, and that's going to be March 21st, St. Francis Catholic Church Dining Hall, 330 Southeast 11th in Portland at 7 p.m. And there's going to be a slideshow, a Q&A discussing the impact of fair trade on indigenous Mexican communities and how this cooperative has been instrumental in the empowerment of women. And that's very important. And let's see here. For more information, you can call VOS, Workers' Rights Education Project. And that would be 503-233-6787. So that's Tuesday night at St. Francis Catholic Church Dining Hall, 330 Southeast 11th at 7 p.m. Okay, there you have it. So lots and lots of things going on. As I said, don't forget the march. On Sunday begins at around the rally begins at around people are gathering at 1:30, but rally begins around 2 in Waterfront Park near Oak Street, and this is going to be a march to hopefully manifest peace in Iraq and an end to all of the ridiculous and murderous and counterproductive things that the Bush crime family is doing in our name, which got to change. So Not only is it nearly time for spring equinox, but today is St. Patrick's Day. And that's one of the reasons why we decided to talk about this topic today, because St. Patrick's Day, well, let's just say that it was one of those early attempts by the Christian Church at a PR spin. You know, the people in the White House didn't just make up spin and PR and outright lying. That's been going on for centuries, and St. Patrick's Day is an early example of that. I wanted to read you an excerpt from what we jokingly call the Bible of Women's Spirituality, the Women's Encyclopedia of Myths and Secrets by Barbara G. Walker. And she has some rather choice words to say about St. Patrick. Basically, she says he's bogus. Like many of the early saints, they were thinly disguised pagan deities or other, you know, pagan archetypes that they were trying to convince pagans that they should worship. And of course, he actually was, you know, he was called, you know, associated with the shamrock. But of course, the shamrock was sacred to the Irish for a long time. And the Book of Leinster, for example, said Patrick's mother was the goddess Matcha. So, you know, he was already considered to be a deity. The Welsh form of the triple goddess, who is Guinevere, was said to have slain the Irish knight Sir Patrice with her magic apple. But I thought you'd find this fascinating. She says, St. Patrick's Day was known throughout the Roman Empire as the day of apotheosis of the god slain during the Ides of March, Liber Pater or Mars Pater, who would have been known as Patricius or Patrick in Britain. At his Roman festival on March 17th, a gigantic phallus was paraded through the streets and solemnly crowned with a garland representing the divine yoni by the hands of a specially selected matron. They don't say how she was selected. We'll leave that to your imagination. The phallus of Liber Pater was also known as the palladium, planted in the womb temple of Vesta. The priest who represented this god's power was the Pater Patrum, father of fathers, or else the Peter, the phallic stone pillar, or else Palladius. An old chronicle mentioned a Roman-Irish martyr called Bishop Palladius, the first bishop to the Irish who believe in Christ, sacrificed to the Irish moon goddess before Patrick appeared. Evidently, both Palladius and Patrick were the same pagan god adopted into the canon after his old shrines were taken over by Christians. And, of course, there never were any snakes in Ireland. That, again, is a metaphor for driving paganism underground, not out of Ireland, and overlaying Christianity by force on top of it. So just a little counter-propaganda here to start out your St. Patrick's Day. And welcome, Ani.
And thank you. Thank you for the short historical overview. In fact, you know, as we look at the patriarchy, and I'll just go ahead and use the patriarchy word, and as we look at Christian hegemony, because the two are really intertwined.
Why, yes.
We are brought to today. And I've been focusing this year on what's happening now as far as Christian hegemony and once again driving those not in the cradle of dominionism underground again. You know, there are efforts to that effect.
Oh, yes.
And I say, you know, we should learn. We should learn. And we should say, no, let's not do that again.
Well, yes, we should. And, you know, there's a lot of disturbing, I mean, you know, we've been talking about the patriarchy the whole time we've been on the air. The patriarchy is nothing new. And, you know, really evangelizing Christian zealots are nothing new. But things are really heating up. Like, for example, the state of Missouri, freshman representative there introduced a resolution to make Missouri a state that recognizes Christianity as its official religion. That's a little frightening.
Well, that might have something to do with the fact that the Missouri House voted on Wednesday to ban state funding of contraceptives for low-income women and to prohibit state-funded programs from referring women to other programs.
Isn't that special?
Yeah.
And, you know, I guess I don't understand, why would the state want to encourage people who are poor to have lots and lots of children
they
can't feed?
Well, actually, if you read into dominionist thinking, it is still considered the duty to be fruitful and multiply.
Even if you can't afford to feed
them. It is still considered the duty. And I was reading, let's just say, a whole lot too much, possibly, of the dominionist.
You didn't reread The Handmaid's Tale last night, I hope. It would give you nightmares.
No, I did not reread The Handmaid's Tale, but this stuff is even worse because, in fact,
it's real.
It's here, it's now, it's happening. Let's see. This, This right here is from a website called the Christian Family website.
Oh, boy.
Your whole family can and should be a praise to the name and doctrine of Jesus Christ. This is a Dominionist website explaining exactly why and how you need to be a Christian family.
If you're not Christian.
The reason we're saying Dominionist, because we want to be very clear, not all Christians, we understand, not all Christians believe this.
And many Christians would rather die than live under a theocracy.
And many Christians are acting against this sort of, theocracy.
Yes, many, and not only just individuals, but institutions, you know.
Absolutely. In fact, I found another great website.
Synods or whatever you call them are disturbed by this movement.
I found another great website called Talk to Action that seemed to be Christians of concern around theocracy a-coming. Anyway, let me focus in for just a moment on this sort of the on-the-ground. I picked this because it was really typical of the dozens of sites I have looked at trying to get a feel. Again, we've talked about the Dominionists who have White House connections, and we have talked about the sort of really merging at the upper echelons of the Dominionist movement with elements of this administration. But I want to talk about what is being put out to the sort of Joe Blow person who is interested in living right by God and maybe stumbling into, this kind of thinking, this kind of spiritual path.
Those who are inclined to do what websites tell them to do.
Well, you know, I'm just figuring this is sort of typical of of writings in general, not just websites. Those that are on the ground, this is that view of Dominionism. The Christian life is a spiritual and an heavenly life. Your conversation is not of earth, it is of heaven. When you've been washed in the blood, the old man and his corruption is dead. See all of Romans chapters 6, 7, and 8. And you are a new creature, 2 Corinthians 5:17. The workmanship of God himself, Ephesians 2:10. Now you are and a spiritual. If so, be that you've been born again. The riches of the grace of God are now yours, that you may magnify the name and doctrine of Jesus Christ. What is grace? It is your divine favor, influence, and empowerment, all that God may be glorified for his excellent greatness. You can't do anything on your own. You need to call on God's rich grace. He will help you live a righteous, sanctified, consecrated life. It is blessed. When you were a sinner, you trafficked in iniquity and debauchery, but now you are a Christian, and you are to be a broker of righteousness, transacting your Father's business.
Oh, my.
The righteousness of God is to pervade our whole life. Our families should reflect the glory of God. Husband and wife are joint heirs of the grace of life. Our children are holy and treated as an heritage of God. But there is a problem. It's rare to see the above situation. Many of today's Christian families look just like the world in every aspect, except they go to church regularly. At home, everybody is in a different room watching Hellavision. And I have to say,
that is hilarious.
Well, I have to say, Hellavision is something I found in common from many different organizations and many different writings of concern. Oh, help me, my 5-year-old is watching Hellavision, you know, that sort of thing. This seems to be very, very common terminology, and you know, this is something we possibly could agree on. Anyways, there's arguing and unkindness in the household. Love has waxed cold and everybody is easily offended. Mothers are working outside the home.
Horrors.
Children are in public schools. Children
shocking.
Children are considered a nuisance and unruly by the very parents that raised them to be that way. Instead of a blessing, the children are worldly and ugly. Divorce, Tory calls it legalized adultery, is rampant.
Legalized adultery, isn't that special?
Yeah. So, So-called Christian families are cursed because King Jesus and his doctrine is not the center of them. Many people attribute their household turmoil to some deficiency in their spouse, when in actuality they are out of position their own self and being rebuked by God.
Right.
So then there's some psalms going on.
That's super disturbing, that their equation, that anything bad that you don't like in your life that happens to you is because you didn't do right by God. It couldn't just be that bad things happen sometimes.
And there is no need to be pitiful. There's a little paragraph on no need to be pitiful. There is a definition. Okay, here we go. Bible-based Christian families live as heirs together in the grace of life. Family, a household, the basic social unit consisting of a husband and a wife and the children that they rear. Note, it does not take a village to raise a child. It takes the blood of Jesus, the word of God, a father, and a mother to raise a child. That's the Bible pattern. If you are a single parent, the blood, the word, and grace will sustain you.
I see. So if you're a single parent, you're not supposed to have friends or relatives or neighbors help you at all, because that's against God's plan?
I think that sort of
flies in the face of the whole Christian congregation. You know, the congregation is your family.
It depends which part of Christian you're talking about.
Well, you know, and of course, this all sounds like, well, this is kind of wacky, but whatever. And you know, if people want to live, you know, if people want to marry monkeys and stand on their heads all day, I don't care. But the problem is that the folks with these views are trying to impose them on everyone else.
That's the problem.
That's dominionism. That's theocracy. You know, I don't care if people want to marry wastebaskets and, you know, live underground with, wrapped in tinfoil. But when they try to make everybody else do it, that's when I get a little disturbed.
Yes, that is when I get very, very disturbed. Like when I see the definition of mothers. Wives, submit yourselves unto your husbands as unto the Lord. You know, they go on to quote the rest of the Ephesians phrase.
Well, and also, what's really disturbing in that one is, I suppose if you looked at, you know, Mary as the mother of God and how she supposedly got pregnant, that would actually mean that wives should allow their husbands to rape them.
Well, in fact, I believe it would actually wipe out rape within marriage, because your duty is to submit.
Right. Whether you want to or not.
Ipso facto.
Whether your husband beats you or, you know.
Read Proverbs 31:10-31 for a portrait of a righteous sister. Let her own works praise her. Daughters of Sarah, there's a link to a website, Daughters of Sarah, wives be in submission to your own husbands. The Bible is doctrine. You know, it goes on. I'll spare you.
Thank you.
It goes on. I could. Because I was horrified. And like I said, you know, it's like I checked out a whole lot of different sites. I've watched a little of the fundamentalist media that I can get. And I'm saying there is a large picture being painted right now of the righteous and the holy and those worthy and those that ain't.
It's time to connect the dots. Let's do some dot connecting. The Federalist Society, some of you may have heard of them, the Federalist Society, of which Antonine Scalia and Clarence Thomas are members, of which I do believe, I could be wrong, but I do believe that John Roberts is a member also.
So I would check that before.
It's definitely Scalia and Thomas and a bunch of other people who are, high up in government. The Federalist Society is a very closed group of extremely conservative people involved in government who believe in this dominionist claptrap. This is their agenda to promote dominionism. I know perhaps some of you know that Antonin Scalia has repeatedly said that he and Clarence Thomas both have said that they are believers in natural law, which isn't about what you might think. Natural law means that they believe that God's law is the source of and superior to man-made law. Now, of course, that's a scary thought. Now, the Federalist Society is working hard to take over the federal government in various ways by filling up the Supreme Court, other benches, the federal benches, and, of course, you know, they're hoping, they would love to see everybody in Congress and Senate and the White House be Federalist Society members also. They are part of the Dominionist movement. They are also connected although not directly by philosophy in agenda with the people who wrote the Project for a New American Century, which of course not only proposes a way that American neocons would take over not only America and the rest of the globe, but outer space as well. I mean, this sounds like, you know, something out of a Scientology handbook, but it's for real, folks. And these folks are dead serious. They want to take over this country, compel everyone to live the way they do, to believe the way they do, and if not, then they have various solutions. Some people actually have gone so far as to, in public, call for the removal of people who do not cleave to these beliefs via killing them, executing them.
In fact, retired Justice Sandra Day O'Connor gave an extremely rare interview to Nina Totenberg, and she did not allow herself to be aired, but she granted Nina the interview, and then Ms. Totenberg went ahead and sort of paraphrased
Nina Tote Bag, as we like to call her, because they like to give out tote bags as premiums on PBS.
How clever. As somebody who had a last name that was made fun of, I do not.
Well, you should talk. You spelled it wrong on the memo put out.
Yes, honey, I know that. But that has nothing to do with people making fun of my last name, does it? O'Connor, when she was talking to Totenberg, said, oh, look at that, it's 8:05 in the morning. Okay, O'Connor didn't say that.
She didn't.
I'm saying it. You're listening to KBOO-FM Portland, your very own community radio station. Totenberg was talking about the importance for the courts to be able to disagree with governors, Congress, presidents, and as O'Connor put it, to make them, quote, really, really angry, end quote. But O'Connor continued, if we don't make them mad, some of the time, we probably aren't doing our jobs as judges, and our effectiveness, she said, is premised on the notion that we won't be subject to retaliation for our judicial acts.
Funny how she, like, got religion a little bit too late after she was the swing vote in Bush v. Gore.
Well, you know, I have no idea what was up with her in Bush v. Gore. And really, I was not a fan of her decisions often.
Exactly.
On the other hand, I will go ahead and pay attention when she says what she is saying. So, the nation's founders wrote repeatedly, O'Connor said, that without an independent judiciary to protect individual rights from the other branches of government, those rights and privileges would amount to nothing. But, she said, the founding fathers' new statutes and constitutions don't protect judicial independence. People do. She took aim at former GOP leader DeLay. She didn't actually name him, but she quoted his attacks on the courts at a meeting of conservative Christian groups. The meeting of a conservative Christian group, Justice Sunday, last year.
Oh, yes. That's a very scary phenomenon.
If we recall, when DeLay took out, after the courts, for rulings on abortions, prayer, and the Terri Schiavo case. This, said O'Connor, was after the federal courts had applied Congress's one-time-only statute about Schiavo as it is written. Not O'Connor said, as the congressman might have wished they were written. So it gets worse, she says, noting that there have been several death threats against judges. It doesn't help, she said, when a high-profile senator suggests that there may be a connection between violence against judges and decisions that the senator disagrees with. O'Connor didn't name names, but it was Texas Senator John Cornyn who made the statement. After a Georgia judge was murdered in the courtroom and the family of a federal judge in Illinois was murdered in the judge's home, O'Connor observed that there's been a lot of suggestions lately for so-called judicial reforms, recommendations for massive impeachment of judges, stripping the courts of jurisdiction, and cutting judicial budgets to punish offending judges.
Excuse me. And, you know, Ruth Bader Ginsburg is getting death threats lately.
Well, yeah, they both were, actually. That was a part of another article shortly before O'Connor stepped down. They both have been getting death threats. Any of these might be debatable, she said, as long as they are not retaliation for decisions that political leaders disagree with. O'Connor said that she is against judicial reforms driven by nakedly partisan reasoning, pointing to the experience of developing countries and former communist countries where interference with the independent judiciary has allowed dictatorships to flourish. O'Connor said that we must be ever vigilant against those who would strong-arm the judiciary into adopting the preferred policies. It takes a lot of degeneration before a country falls into dictatorship, she said. We should avoid these ends by avoiding the beginnings.
I mean, the mere fact that she isn't speaking about such topics is shocking. I mean, you'd never hear a retired Supreme Court justice talk about...
Warn you about the dictatorship that's on
the
way.
This is unprecedented. And, you know, we have a caller, and we haven't even announced our telephone number yet. That would be 503-231-8187 if you would like to join this discussion of theocracy and its threat to our everything. In the meantime, let's talk to our caller. You're on the air, caller.
Good morning, Ani.
Good morning.
And
morning.
Melanie. This is Liamaka Gray, and I wanted to call and let you know that I'm home from the hospital and recuperating and listening to you guys this morning.
Oh, this is wonderful.
And I wanted to call and respond to theocracy. I have been spending a great deal of time reading after hearing Marlena last year talk about theocracy and Opus Dei, and so I've been doing a lot of reading.
Yeah.
There are two responses I have, and I'll keep this fairly short. The first one is, there's a book by Alice Miller called Thou Shalt Not Be Aware. And in her book, she does quite a bit of, spends quite a bit of time talking about Peter Paul Rubens' masterpiece of Abraham and Isaac on the Mountain. And in that, she dissects that whole picture from the point of view of child abuse.
Uh-huh.
And parents who would destroy their children, who would murder their children because this voice tells them to. And one of the things she talks about in there is the scene where they're at the mountain, the blade is at Isaac's throat, and one of the things Abraham does is he covers Isaac's eyes and says, and that's where the do not be aware, thou shalt not be aware.
Right.
And she uses this whole theme to point up the, you know, how we don't look, we don't see what's really going on, and Isaac's eyes are covered as his father is getting ready to murder him.
Well, basically she's talking about denial, which is a cornerstone of American culture.
Yes, and fundamentalism. And I grew up in fundamentalism, went to Bible school and seminary.
Uh-huh.
The other thing I'd like to point out is if people are not reading about Opus Dei, there's several very good books that are available through the library that are phenomenal. Recently, a woman was in town by the name of Barbara Rossing, and she's written a book called Rapture Exposed. And it's a wonderful book about the Revelation, and she had a whole day seminar, and it was free, and I went to it, and she's talking about what the fundamentalists, what the right wing, the conservatives have done, the neocons who have taken the message of Revelation and turned it to their own use. And she talks about in the book how they pick and choose the phrases they use, the references they give, and what it's about. And she points out that they never go to the last chapter of Revelation, which is the promise of what's to come. And that's where we're supposed to go. We're not supposed to stay in the death and destruction. Armageddon was only mentioned one time in the whole Bible. That's it. And so they play on that. And it's, again, it goes back to the creation using fear and terror to immobilize people.
Right.
But it's a wonderful book. It's called The Rapture Exposed by Barbara Rossing. It's hard to get right now. You have to order it through Powell's because it's really... Just being taken off the shelf as fast as it comes in. But I wanted to mention those.
Rapture Exposed by Barbara Rossing?
Yes.
And I assume you mean because people are purchasing and not because it's being banned or anything.
No, yes. No. People, as fast as it gets in,
they're taking
them off the shelves. Yeah. I haven't got my copy yet, but I'm anxious to get it. But it was a wonderful day spent with her. She offered a whole different perspective of how, and that we need to respond. This was one of the things she said, we absolutely must stand up and speak out. We cannot allow them to take this message and turn it into this destructive theme, which is the domination system's message.
Yes,
yeah.
I totally agree. Well, you know, I just imagine, you know, usually people will who poo-poo you will say, it's a good argument to say, well, how do you think people would like it if Wiccans or Sikhs or Zoroastrians decided to force their religion on everybody? They would freak out. You know, it's not okay for just because the majority of people in this country are Christian doesn't mean that it's okay to force other people to be too.
I think this
and to be
a
specific type.
Mm-hmm. Many people call themselves Christian because they hold values that are similar to New Testament. But most of them don't go to church.
Exactly.
And there are reasons for that. I'm not a Christian. I walked away from that a long time ago. But I have a deep spirituality and that's what I do. I do spirituality, don't do religion.
And it's really nobody's business what your spiritual path is except your own, you know?
Yes, and that's mine. But I think your topic this morning is so timely in view of what's going on with Bush and the neocons, and as these people are saying out, we absolutely must find our voices and find a way to stand up to them and to respond and say this is not true. Alice Miller's book gives us an insight into the emotional, psychological, social context, and Barbara Rossing gives us a message about how to respond to them. What are they doing here? What are they saying?
I'm really glad that you brought up Alice Mueller because of her work on child abuse in particular. Another of the things that I've ran across that's a real common thread is the extremely harsh discipline and treatment of children. And really emphasizing sort of that power over, I have all control kind of thing. And there was, Leah, are you there? No. I'm sorry, we were having a little technical difficult. It was a difficult moment for us. So we have throughout the whole dominionist and very hardcore fundamentalist philosophies, an acceptance, beyond an acceptance, an advocacy of what I would consider child abuse. And in fact, what the state would consider child abuse.
It's very rigid and hierarchical, and you know, you will do what I tell you because I say so kind of thing.
There's a couple of folks who operate a website called No Greater Joy. Their names are Michael and Debbie Pearl. They've written and published several books, one called No Greater Joy. There are books online, and they basically guide the religiously motivated to beat their children. There's an article that actually talks about a death of a child, in one instance, from a mother following their prescription. A Johnston County mother accused of murdering her 4-year-old adopted son and beating 2 other adopted children surfed the internet, said her attorney. She found literature by an evangelical minister and his wife who recommend using plumbing supply lines to spank misbehaving children. Paddock ordered Michael and Debbie Pearl's books and started spanking her adopted children as suggested in them. After the youngest of the children died, his older sister and brother told investigators about the spankings they'd endured. The 9-year-old brother was beaten so badly that he limped, prosecutors said. Bruises were found on his backside. Sean, the 4-year-old, died after being wrapped so tightly in blankets that he suffocated. That, too, was a form of punishment and suggested in the writings of Michael and Debbie Pearl. I mean, really sick, sick stuff. What is going on with this and what's going on with these people? When they say the state is interfering by trying to protect their children from beatings with plumbing supply lines, You might think, well, when does the state have a right to interfere, and what is religious practice? You know, because I do really feel strongly that there should be a strong distinction between, you know, what spiritual path you bring your children up in and the state intervening in that. As somebody of the pagan path, I don't want the state intervening with how I see fit to raise my child. However, I think that the community overall has an abiding interest in making sure that children are physically safe.
Well, yes. For example, the issue that some states have been having, who have had a huge influx of folks who are immigrants who, in their home countries, practiced female genital mutilation on their children, and some of them are
trying to import that custom
determined
as well.
To continue that, and there's been a huge struggle between them and the authorities.
This argument goes into many different areas, mm-hmm. but I just want to point, you know, really emphasize, considering today's show, that there is a strong part of, I guess, yes. dominionism and this sort of yes. thinking that is trying to, well, you know, basically mm-hmm. come to the fore.
But is he is even
that glorifies
yes.
child beating?
Yes, and even but even in that instance, you see the dichotomy between folks who are, you know, maybe practicing Muslims from Africa or whatever, who want to continue to practice that, versus the long accepted custom of male circumcision in our society, which is probably no less abhorrent in many ways to the child who experiences it. Then, you know what I mean? There's a lot of my religion is better than your religion kind of things going on here. You know, there's a lot of double
That's
standards
true.
And hypocrisy operating. And it's very, you know, it's okay for people who are part of a more mainstream or more accepted religion to do things that people from minority religions wouldn't be allowed to do.
Yeah, well, I really wanted to stay on track with this, though, for a mm-hmm. moment, because, okay, for example, somebody writes to Michael and Debbie Pearl for advice. Please give me a description of the switch or rod of which you so often speak. I wish you could send me one so I could see it. The rod we speak of is a plumbing supply line that can be bought at any hardware store or large department store. It's a slim, flexible plastic tubing that supplies water to sinks and toilets. Ask for a quarter-inch supply line. They cost less than a dollar. I always give myself one swat before I swat the child to remind myself of how much force to exert. It stings the skin without bruising or damaging tissue. It's a real attention getter. Michael demonstrates its use in our seminar videos.
Which is just fascinating, because if you really read the biblical passage that they're basing that on, they're talking about shepherds and sheep, and the rod they're discussing is the shepherd's crook, which guides the sheep, which they never hit the sheep with, ever.
Yes. Well, Death by Chastening Rod is the mm-hmm. name of the article that I'm quoting from. It's actually hugely long, and it is found at the Talk to Action website, which is a website of Christians of Common Sense, Reclaiming Citizen History and Faith, Reclaiming Citizenship History and Faith, Talk to Action. Let's go ahead, take a caller, 503-231-8187 is the number to call, 503-231-8187. Do join us in this conversation. Good morning, you're on the air.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. My name is Mark, and I'm very committed to liberation theology.
Yes.
I want to strongly recommend the writings and the example of Dietrich Bonhoeffer, Walter Wink, and his book The Powers That Be, and Dorothy Zola. Dorothy Zola is a very remarkable liberation theologian. And she once said that God did not create the world finished, like a thing that is always the same. And she also said that unless we're able to suffer, we can't you know, recognize God. And there is a long tradition and long emphasis upon the suffering God, as opposed to the apathetic God, which needs to be understood. Dietrich Bonhoeffer said, "Only the suffering God can help." And now we're faced with a certain triumphalism, religion being used as a foil for nationalism or for predatory capitalism.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's
so
interesting.
The dichotomy that you're putting out there is the suffering God versus the which God?
The apathetic God.
Well, I think that's fascinating, considering that Buddhists believe that earthly desires are the source of all suffering. I mean, I think, and then of course Wicca, which Ani and I both follow, albeit in slightly different ways, postulates that suffering is not necessary to experience the ecstatic deity or to find, you know, satisfaction or enlightenment or whatever you want to call it. That suffering, in fact, is, I mean, although it's part of human experience, is certainly not required to make any spiritual gains. And so, you know, it's very interesting that the dichotomy comes down between suffering and apathy. I think that's telling.
Dorothy Sola, I think, also said that unless we are wounded, we cannot be healed. That we have to recognize our questionability, you know, our imperfection. Faith for Dietrich Bonhoeffer was very different from religion, because at that time in 1933, the church was taken over by a Reichschurch bishop who had no interest in Christianity, only in obedience to Hitler.
Uh-huh. Yes.
So Bonhoeffer developed a secret discipline, an arcana discipline, an underground church, and helped us understand that faith is personal but not private, that it involves more love and devotion than emotion.
I think that really, really, that's a real your mileage may vary kind of thing. You know, this conversation is bringing to mind some pronouncements from the clergy early in the 1900s, when anesthesia was not quite the norm yet for women who wanted it during childbirth. And I remember there was one quote from a church man who said that allowing women to use anesthesia during childbirth would deprive God of their earnest cries for help.
Yes.
I mean, that's just really, I'm sorry, that's a word I can't say on the air. Mm. That's sick. That's messed up. There we go.
Bonhoeffer insisted that we are called to create a new language and a new mathematics, and that the world will be different when people speak as Jesus spoke in a way that scandalized and attracted at the same time. A very powerful witness. I also just want to mention an article that I uploaded on Portland Indie Media entitled Captain Ahab and His Watery Death, which talks about political messianism and how Ahab and Bush seem to be motivated by revenge.
Uh-huh. I think there's a lot of revenge going on there.
And the crew hardly knew that they were being called to be Ahab's instruments, just as, you know, NATO hardly knew.
Well, just as 85% of the folks in Iraq, that they just did a Zogby poll where they polled a whole bunch of people who were on duty in Iraq, and like 85% of them thought they were there to correct the Iraqis or punish them for having weapons for mass destruction and for being involved in September 11th. And of course they weren't. I think what they're really there for is to, you know, that whole like Inigo Montoya thing, you know, you tried to kill my daddy, now you must die sort of thing.
So
not
Bush
to mention the neocons agenda.
So Bush, as the preacher of holy war, is now blaming Iran.
Oh, yes. I'm very, very concerned about that.
We can't see our own darkness. Maybe this is the consequence of our greed or of our wealth, you know.
I'm extremely concerned that in the next few months or year that there could be, God forbid, a nuclear weapon loosed in Iran over... I mean, I don't know what's going
to
happen, but it's not going to be good.
Well, we should understand that Iran has security needs.
Of course they do.
And is justifiably worried about its survival.
I don't blame them.
Right?
Yeah. If I was Iran, I would be very worried if I had crazy boy George Bush next door bombing the Iraqis for doing absolutely nothing.
Well, as a delusional person, I expect my one certainty is that Bush and Cheney are going to resign. That they're going to.
I wouldn't count on it.
They're going to say it's the ingrown toenail. You know that the policies have been fine, but.
Right.
Well, thanks for listening.
All right.
You.
Thanks for calling.
Okay.
Well, hey, it's almost 8:30. We'll be here until 9, but you got to stay tuned for what one person said very charmingly this morning called Marlena's Electronic Saloon, which I thought was rather appropriate considering today is the day of gratuitous drinking for some people.
And what they
perhaps
might
that salon is going to turn into a saloon for the day. You don't know. Maybe she'll show up with a big bottle of green beer.
I haven't seen it so far. But she could be hiding.
It could happen. But yes, you don't want to go away, but we'll be here until 9. So if you'd like to join this conversation about how to thwart theocracy and its minions, 503-231-8187.
And, you know, and tying back to the historical ends of things, really, a little bit, we have, in my life, you know, I come from a long line of Brits, and some Scots, actually, if you get back three generations.
Well, you know, they all got around. They sort of, like, paddled from island to island, you know.
Well, you don't even have to paddle to get from Scotland to Britain. But, hey, you know, so what I'm saying is I'm your generic sort of Celtic mix.
Yeah, that's what I like to call it, UCM, undifferentiated Celtic mongrel, you know.
Yeah, there you go. So when we talk about St. Patrick's, when we talk about the whole persecution of the pagans, the driving the old ways underground, as Melody pointed out astutely earlier, when you drive things underground, you don't kill them.
That's right.
They change. They grow differently. And in this example, where the Christian overlay so usurped so much of the imagery, they come out in very strange ways. So that, in fact, you know, being very close to my grandmother as a child, seeing her daily, she being an important part of my life, she would never have called herself anything other than a good Christian woman. She was a C of E, you know, Church of England, which I guess closest thing on this continent is Episcopalian, right? Mm-hmm. So she was a good C of E. And wouldn't you know, this is the woman that taught me how to read tea leaves, how to make offerings to the fairies, how to ask the spirits for what I need.
Well, doesn't believe in fairies in Britain?
Yeah. Well, yeah, up until probably my generation when television took over. Or should I say hellavision? All right. And actually, I mean, yeah, fairies was not like a distant folk custom. It was sort of a normative real experience for people in Britain.
Well, very day, the vast, vast, vast majority of people in Hawaii, despite their origin, they might not admit it, but they secretly believe in Pele. Everybody over there believes in Pele. When you live on a volcano, you tend to believe in things like that.
Well, yeah. Anyway, I digress just a little, but I wanted to point out that, you know, there are ways that the old ways actually do carry through,
yes,
and
they
are part of our quirky family histories. You know, oh yeah, Aunt Mabel, my God, the weird stuff she used to talk about. You know, that kind of stuff is really a part of the old ways and how we carry through tradition through times of persecution.
Yep.
And being driven underground. Hey, you got some stuff
to read. I've got some updates here, yes. In fact, I can tell you exactly what's happening at 9 on Marlena's Electronic Salon with Marlena Smith. Well, with who else? She'll chat with Ed Goldberg about politics and culture. And at 10, her guest will be the original Mad Cowboy, Howard Lyman. And at 11 on Democracy Now!, her interview with the co-authors of Cobra 2, a book based on interviews with a wide range of officials, as well as a classified report based on interrogations of more than 110 Iraqi officials and officers and 600 Iraqi documents. Also, tune in tonight at 6 for Bread and Roses. Host Gabi Ross interviews Dr. Wangari Maathai, who is a Nobel Peace Prize recipient, member of parliament in Kenya, and environmental and democracy activist.
Wangari Maathai is such a huge hero of mine. She is an amazing woman. She started the Green Belt Movement, which has planted some 30 million trees in Kenya.
It's fabulous.
Probably well more since that book I read some years ago.
That's a lot of trees.
That's a whole lot of trees. Mostly done by women.
If each person planted 1,000 trees, you'd need 30,000 people.
And
that's a lot of trees.
To actually get women into empowerment, affecting their own lives, restoring the environment to give them and their families better quality of life. She's an incredible person. She's consistently spoken for sustainable mm-hmm. development, and to the point that, in fact, in 99, during some protests around developments just outside of Nairobi and the loss of more unincorporated land, at protests that she was sort of being held responsible for by calling them
mm-hmm.
or by appearing at them, perhaps, she was publicly lashed and beaten by security. You know, this woman is incredible.
And, you know, it ties right into theocracy, too.
And she does not back down. And
exactly.
She is the 2004 Nobel Peace Prize winner.
It ties right into that because, you know, keeping women down is one of the key goals of theocracy, the theocracy movement. We have seen over and over, if you look at the global statistics on, you know, health and education and feminism and blah, 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 you see very clearly that the number one way to improve the lives of everyone on the planet is to raise up the educational status of women and the access of women to a way to make their own living. When women are educated
yes.
and have access and are free to support themselves actively and also have options in terms of have access to birth control and information about it and are educated, learn how to read and write, that does more for to improve the well-being and health of a country and its residents than anything else on the planet. There is no accident that one of the primary goals of theocracy is to keep women in the place they have designated for them, which is beneath the thumb of, you know, their a man. And, you know, in some of these movements lately that we've seen to limit abortion, now there's a bill in Texas, a very restrictive parental notification bill, that would mandate that every girl under 18 have to get the signature of both parents on a permission slip to have an abortion. And so then, you know, you wonder, like, well, what if this woman doesn't have, you know, a father? You know, what if her father is in prison or he's disappeared or whatever? And so we were, you know, it's a joke, but, you know, you wonder, well, like, you know, would her brother do, or, you know, her 4-year-old brother could sign that. It's just like, it has to be a male. You know, if you're female, you're not allowed to have agency in these people's minds. And that's the thing that they fear more than anything, is women being truly equal. And that's just, I'm sorry, that's just not on. I am not going to contribute to a world where women are not considered equal partners in the
but,
world.
But, honey, that's just not godly. You got to get with the program.
Well, then, I'm sorry, then God is wrong. If that's their God's belief, then it's bogus.
Then you're disagreeing with God. All right.
Well,
all right.
I don't believe in their God anyway, but I especially think that that's... Why in the world would... How does that serve human beings to worship a God that thinks that 51% of the human race is bad and evil?
For the husband is the head of the wife, even as Christ is the head of the church, and he is the savior of the body. Therefore, as the church is the subject unto Christ, so let wives be to their own husbands in everything.
I'm sorry.
Ephesians 5:22-24.
That reads like the writings of a cult. I just, you know, I hope I'm not offending anybody who's a sincere Christian believer.
Go ahead and take
believer,
a caller and see if they're offended.
I sort of doubt that.
Let's go ahead,
sensible
take a
Christians really buy that.
Good morning. You're on the air.
Hello. Yeah.
Hello.
I hope I'm not being too micro-focused, but I'd like to recommend a book. I heard the author speaking on the radio.
Yeah.
Called Bush on the Couch.
Oh, that's a great
yeah.
book.
I mean, there's more of the problems that are going on than Bush, but it just really points out the kind of motivations that he has and how they're manipulating him. You know, the people, the Cheneys of the world.
And it kind of ties back into what Leah was saying earlier about Alice Miller. And I think a lot of George Bush's problem, acting as an armchair psychologist here, is, and this echoes what they say in Bush on the Couch, is his... He had a terrible childhood,
mm-hmm.
and his sister, who he adored, died unexpectedly when he was a small child, and he was just, basically, they acted like it never happened, and I think he was really traumatized by that, and I think the guy is really a mess, and you know, I don't really completely blame him for the way he is. I think that his parents really screwed him up.
Yeah, but of course there is personal responsibility.
Of course. But, I mean, I do think it's sad the way he was raised, and I don't think it helped him any.
Yeah, because most of us were screwed up by our parents,
yes.
but not many of us are
yes.
genocidal maniacs.
No.
Right.
But, I mean, I don't think that helped any. You know, when you're raised to believe, since you're rich and powerful, that you can do whatever you want, and then you're also screwed up, that's a powerful
yeah.
combination.
Yeah. No, true yeah. enough.
Yes, and I thought the audience should know that it was a forensic psychologist who was, I think he was trained to remotely... analyzed mm-hmm. people he couldn't have access to, like foreign dictators, etc.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was no slouch in this regard.
Yeah,
also,
Marlena has interviewed him a couple of different
times.
Yeah,
that's probably where I heard it.
Yeah.
And another thing I'd like to mention is the book about how the right stole the election is likely to do so again.
Fooled Again.
Fooled Again,
by
right.
Mark Crispin Miller.
And I read a really excellent article about how the liberal left has failed us in that regard, the Terry Grosses, et cetera.
Oh, yeah.
Refused to acknowledge that author or have him on the air.
I'm not so sure I consider Terry Gross to be liberal.
Well, no, not anymore. I wouldn't call it a true liberal.
I think Terry Gross is moderate.
No.
don't think there's very many liberal people left on NPR
no,
or
National Pentagon
media.
Radio, yes.
There's,
right.
there's a lot of liberals on Air America, but other than that, that's pretty much it for mainstream media.
Don't get me started on them.
There's Keith Olbermann, and, you know, he's about it in mainstream cable news.
Right,
most
well,
of them are not liberal.
I think we can all hold hope that the empire will run out of cash. They just raised the debt limit to $9,000 billion.
Unbelievable. I mean, we are in such dire straits. We owe our entire underwear, practically. We're down to nothing. We make nothing. Everything is imported here, as was brought up by, is pointed out by this Dubai port scandal.
Mm-hmm,
we see that,
mm-hmm.
you know, like, we don't make anything here.
And
we owe everything we
right.
own to other countries.
And
if they decide to call in the chips, we would be so screwed.
Right, and that's the whole idea, is to part out America below our feet, you know,
yep.
so that we have no control over these things, wages or anything.
Well,
so.
It won't be long until people do start calling in the chips, and then what are we going to do? We're going to be in such dire straits. I don't even want to think about it.
Well, grow food. One thing I'd like to mention to everybody
yes.
is I see,
yes.
of all the trees, if you see 100 trees, maybe one of them is a food-bearing tree.
I totally agree.
I think maybe we should stop going ornamental and try to grow more food.
I know. Here we have this city where we have so many flowering cherry trees, and they're all those non-fruiting trees.
Right.
I realize that cherry trees that make fruit are messy and blah, blah, blah.
I know.
Not if you glean.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, hey, the birds eat most of them if you don't get them. But I think that growing food is a really, really great idea. It's something that people used to take for granted, and
mm-hmm.
no one hardly does it anymore.
I figure, you know, I'm going to be allergic to the cherry blossoms either way.
Either way, yes.
Right.
Might as well produce some fruit.
That's
and,
right.
And, you know, if you don't feel motivated to, you know, get into the pruning technology and all that intensive farming, just plant one anyways and see what happens. You
yeah,
know?
Right.
All right. Well, thank you for your time.
Thanks for calling.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, if you and your neighbors get together, I mean, you have to plant, fruit trees have to have a pollinator mostly. Some of them are self-pollinating. If you get together with folks in your neighborhood and you say, well, Bob, if you plant this kind of tree and Mary, you plant this kind of tree and I plant this kind of tree, then you can have your whole neighborhood can sort of be a pollen fest and you can all have fruit trees and the bees will all be happy and so will you.
Yeah, there you go. Backyard happiness. Good morning to our next caller. You are on the air.
Hello, caller.
Hi. Now you're on the air.
Yeah, I'm calling just in response to a person who some calls ago talked about having to have experienced some pain to be able
yeah.
to. Okay. I'm 81, so I've lived a life, and I also know who Bonhoeffer was. I emigrated from Germany. I was able to get out from under the Nazis.
Uh-huh.
And I, from a psychological point of view, you were implying masochism, et cetera. I think it's a true thing that you have to have known some pain in your life to be able to empathize, to be able to feel deeply, to be able to be in touch with the sacred. I really feel that is valid.
Yeah. I actually have to say that I believe that everyone has had pain in their lives. I think it's a part of the human condition.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but...
It's
but,
a part of the richness of life's experience.
I agree with you, but I also think that awareness of it... I mean,
yeah.
I think awareness of your own pain, of other people's pain, of without concentrating on it, without focusing on
yeah.
it, but
yes.
just encompassing it, enriches and deepens your spiritual life and your life
empathy.
Altogether.
Well, yeah. And I think that you see compassionate behavior on the part of very, very, very small children.
Exactly.
Who one would assume haven't experienced too much painful things, or even on the part of companion animals who have had happy lives.
Absolutely.
And, you know, they're very compassionate.
But they haven't closed off yet.
Exactly.
I mean, the whole thing is to be open.
Right.
And to be not closed off and to be aware.
I absolutely agree with you when you say to maintain the awareness, to
right.
to actually be able to be with the pain and to not go into that denial state where where we do close ourselves to our own hearts and to others.
Exactly. So it's that whole, the permeable skin, the openness. Okay.
I'm really glad that you called to clarify that, because I was mostly having a trouble, I think, with trying to limit the face of God to the suffering God or the apathetic God.
Yeah.
When to me, God is joy.
Also, the woman, the religious that he mentioned, he wasn't talking about that, because Dietrich Bonhoeffer certainly was not that. I mean, you know, so there are people who are, you know, like Rachel Corrie, for example, who, you know, who was not openly religious at all.
Right.
And who we remembered her martyrdom yesterday, actually, you know, for being so open and so compassionate and so willing to help.
Thank you very much for your call this morning.
Okay.
Take care.
Bye.
Well, I have an announcement here. For those of you who live down Corvallis Way, on Saturday, tomorrow at noon, peace activists will be hosting a march and rally in conjunction with the larger, you know, actions all around the country. The local chapter of Veterans for Peace and a Corvallis group called Alternatives to War will assemble at the Benton County Courthouse along with the supporters at 4th and Monroe in downtown Corvallis. And the march will wind through downtown and come back to the courthouse for a rally with music and speakers. And also tomorrow there's a rally, and I don't know if there's a march, but there's a rally in Eugene at 11 o'clock in front of the federal building, which is at the corner of 7th and I forget the other cross street, but if you live in Eugene, you know where it is. So
there you go.
Or you can ask somebody or look it up in the phone book.
Or meander for a long ways down 7th.
Yes.
Praying you're going the right direction. It is 8:45. 503-231-8187 is the number to call if you would like to join us on the air as well. I believe we have a caller now. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. How are you?
Oh, doing well. How are you?
Good, good. Well, you know, Christianity and Jesus Christ have been mocked since the beginning of time. But the Bible says that in the end, God will prevail, Christianity will prevail. And
did you say Christianity will prevail or that God will prevail? There's a big difference.
Well, God and Christianity are one.
Well, I'm not so sure
Christianity means Christ-like, being like Christ. And the Bible says that in the end, every knee, including yours, and every tongue will confess that Jesus Christ is Lord. There's basically two forces on the earth. There's God. And there's evil, Satan, which you serve.
Well,
and you will be with him forever.
The same God as the Christians do.
I guess here's my question for you. And this is the question I have for everyone that I get to ask this to. If, and I absolutely agree, that is what the Bible says. I'm there with you. But what makes the Bible more right than, say, the Gita or the Torah or the Quran? Or any of the spiritual paths that have.
Because the Word of God was inspired by the Holy Spirit.
Well, how do you know those other writings weren't too?
Because I don't have time to elaborate on the proofs, but there's hundreds. And if you go to a website called Focus on the Family, they have a link there that says, "Is the Bible true?" And Jane Dawson has spelled out over 2,000 points that prove the Bible as the infallible truth of God.
Well, but how do you know
Dobson
those other things aren't true also?
Dobson advocates child beating as well.
Yeah, I mean, just because the Bible, if you
Dobson doesn't believe in child beating, he believes in spanking.
Child beating.
There's a difference between child beating and spanking.
Well, but if you believe the Bible is true, if you believe all that stuff it says on the Focus on the Family website, may be so, but how do you know that all the other documents that Ani mentioned aren't true as well?
Of these other gods and the small gods?
No, they're not other gods. How do you know that they're not all talking about the same? It's like the story about the men looking at the elephant through peepholes. How do you know
that
sees the elephant differently because he only sees a piece of the elephant?
That's all false. That's,
how do you know?
It's all mythological because I know in my spirit that there's one God, and in the end, you will know. You will know, and you will remember the conversation.
That's your opinion. But many other people think differently.
And you know what? God loves you.
That's great.
Well, that's great, but that doesn't mean that
and
all
he longs
people
for
don't love
religion.
God also.
See, that's the difference
and
between religion.
God.
That's the difference between religion and a relationship.
Well, I think that's very condescending to assume that other people don't have a relationship with their deity as they see it the same way that
well,
you have.
Well, there is no other deity. There is no other deity.
But I'm saying, I said deity as they see
it. Muhammad is dead. Allah is
Jesus,
dead.
Sir.
There's one man who died on the cross and rose again, that's Jesus Christ.
I want to talk to you about something else for a second.
Sure. Yeah, go ahead.
And that is in talking about spanking.
Yeah.
Because I'm going to go ahead and put forth that we're probably never going to convince you that there are many ways to look at spirit and God, and you're probably never going to convince us that there's only one.
But in the end, you'll learn, and you know you're wrong.
Whatever. This is probably why, in fact, it's not a good idea to legislate spirituality.
That's
because we in America enjoy this plurality, right?
I'm not legislating.
Cool. I'm glad about that.
I don't believe in legislating relationship.
Now, here's what I have to ask you about spanking.
I honestly mean that.
Okay, that's sweet. That's great. Then I'm hoping that you're working against laws enacted on the basis of spirituality. Because
Yes, I am.
Excellent.
Yes, I am.
I'm changing
hearts. I think
how are you
if
on gay marriage?
Hearts are changed, then they'll make a it'll make a difference.
How are you on gay marriage?
Legislating spirituality? No, I'm against that.
Well, that's legislating your spirituality.
Are you personally opposed to gay marriage, or are you in support of a law to prohibit it?
I'm opposed to gay marriage.
Well, but that's fine.
Are you in favor of a law prohibiting gay marriage?
Yeah, I was against Measure 37.
Pardon? That Measure 37
Measure 37's property rights.
If you voted on Measure
36,
which is kind
of like marriage.
Then that meant that you supported
gay. I'm very happy the way the Oregon Supreme Court voted for 37, but 36
mm-hmm.
Against gay marriage. From the beginning of time, God intended for a man and a woman to marry.
Then you
are
supporting legislation that supports your religious views. See?
No. Religious views and spirituality are two different things.
Well, but my point is, sir, you supported a law which based wanted to base material human law on a certain set of religious beliefs. That's what we're talking about. That's theocracy.
No, because from the beginning of time, God created
that's your belief.
That's your religious belief.
So you
are in favor
of theocracy.
That's what God established on the earth.
Sir, listen to me. That's your opinion. What about other people who have different opinions? Would you want to see them legislate their beliefs?
God established a man and a woman. Look at the plumbing. Come on, guys.
Two
male fittings don't go together. You ever see water run into two male fittings?
You are a theocrat, sir.
You ever see water run into two male fittings?
Allow me to say
this. It doesn't work in the natural.
Dude, you're yelling into the phone.
Okay, I'm sorry. It doesn't work. I mean,
You're getting a little upset about two gay men possibly trying to make love, and I'm wondering what is it about that that's upsetting to you.
They can make all the love they want. I'm not against that. I don't want the institution of marriage brought down to a perverted state.
Doesn't it say judge not lest you be judged in the Bible?
No, I'm not judged. The Bible says it's a perverted lifestyle, so I believe the Bible.
It doesn't say
so what I guess you need to understand...
He says the Bible gave him over to corrupt minds.
What I think you need to understand, sir, is in fact you are interested in legislating your spirituality on the rest of us.
Secondly, I would like to ask you
about spanking children.
Yes.
I was at a website for the Christian Family. I was quoting from it a lot earlier during the show. I don't know if you got a chance to hear that. But there's a section on children. And it says, training up God-glorifying, wise, obedient children. Proverbs 22:6, train up a child in the way he should go.
He won't depart from way. Right.
There you go. Yeah,
don't spare the rod.
Right, that's the one.
Okay.
All right.
Well, you know your Bible.
It actually says spare the rod and spoil the child.
Did you guys grow up in Christian homes?
Actually,
no.
I was a Christian until I was 11. Yes.
I knew it. You know why I knew it?
Because I know the Bible?
No, because somewhere in your life, I believe, you turned away because something happened in your life and you become very, very...
I never turned away. I was never really indoctrinated to believe in Christian teaching.
You know what? You have a bad example.
I read other texts.
I knew you grew up in Christian homes.
Would you prefer if we didn't grow up in Christian homes?
No, you know why? Okay. Because I've seen it, and I've seen it a lot in people's lives who've grown up in Christian homes, and something negative happens to them, whether a father abuses them or something, or a pastor, and they depart from the truth
you know
to
what?
Such extremes and become you're what not, you're doing
dude,
right now.
Dude, in fact, my falling away from the church had everything to do with the fact that I was very interested in the words of Christ and decided to read other philosophies. And the more I read
somewhere you strayed from the truth.
Yeah, it was called education, and it was called comparative religious studies.
It's called deception.
Okay, so I want to get back to child spanking.
I want to get back to child spanking.
All right, okay, child spanking.
Okay, so then I went ahead and I followed some of those links through as it talks about here on this website.
Okay.
It says, and this is a quote from the Christian Family website, don't have your kids playing, watching television, playing Pokemon, and playing videos to keep them out of your hair. Train them. It's fun. And
okay.
So then there are several links to training children.
Okay.
One of them is, in fact, No Greater Joy, Michael and Debbie Pearl. Are you familiar with their work?
No, I'm not.
Okay. And then they have an online book, How to Train Up Your Child, Michael and Debbie Pearl. You can order it off this website. Well, Michael and Debbie Pearl advocate using a plumbing supply line of a quarter inch thick to supply stinging slaps to children as young as 7 months old.
Okay.
Younger than that, they suggest that you yank your baby's hair to discourage rough nursing, for example, because you need to get their attention and show them, in fact, that they are subservient to the parents.
I think that's absurd. I have four daughters, okay?
Uh-huh.
I did spank them, but not that way and not at that age. It's absurd.
I think that's absurd.
A little swat with an object, like a ruler on the behind, was all I needed.
A swat with a ruler, but not hitting with quarter-inch tubing. Where do those lines get drawn?
Okay, I got my fingers whacked with a ruler in school, okay?
Where do the lines get drawn? How is a ruler okay and quarter-inch plumbing tubing not okay to beat your kids with?
Because a flat object tends to do the job, and I think does not leave marks like a piece of tube would.
Well, there you go.
That's my personal belief.
So it's okay if you administer pain, but not if you leave a mark?
What's that?
It's okay to administer pain to them, but not to leave a mark?
I never have left the mark because I never
spanked
on bare skin.
Pain is okay.
A little sting on the behind doesn't leave a mark, but it gets the point across.
And what point is it?
Effectively, because I have four wonderful, obedient daughters.
What point is it?
What's that?
What point are you getting across when you beat someone?
It's not beating. It's
discipline. What point are you getting across when you use pain to teach someone?
It's spanking.
What point are you getting across when you use pain to teach someone?
When you spank and discipline someone, it tells them that what they have done after you've warned them about something. I never spanked my kids prior to not warning them about something, that what their consequences will bring pain, like anything in life.
All right.
If you do something wrong, if you don't pay your bills and you don't pay your bills and you neglect that, the pain is they're going to come after you. If you kill somebody, there's pain. There's consequences to disobedience.
Mm-hmm.
Which you people don't like because you don't want to hear that. You're anarchist.
Wait a minute. How do you know what we like?
Oh, because I can hear the. I know what your philosophy is.
You don't know leadership.
You're against anybody ruling over you.
I am.
I think that's not the natural state of humans to be ruled by others. I think that
because I believe
humans were put here by our Creator to be free.
Or say
using a ruler.
Yes. Well, have you read, like, the words of Thomas Jefferson and the Founding Fathers? They started this whole country on the premise that humans were able to
govern themselves.
Be free and live together in harmony and be self-governing. I mean, I think that's really remarkable.
But humans sometimes need discipline to get them in order.
And so who should decide how much discipline should be administered and to whom and when?
Well, in our country, it's the laws of the land. If you come across, if you kill somebody, what's going to happen to you? You're going to get put in jail, right? Or you're going to get
I grant you that, but somehow or another, we were talking about spanking your kids and teaching them
to pain. Let's bring it down to a simple level. If I tell my daughters when they were young not to do something and they did it, well, they got a little swat.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And what ultimately does that teach them?
And they stopped disobeying, brings pain? And they didn't do it again.
Do you think it's because
not
they?
Not what you knew about it.
Why you think they didn't do it again? Because they found like a moral lesson, or because they were going for pain aversion?
because the what their consequences were associated to pain, and they didn't want to experience the pain again. And then we talked about the moral issues of why that was wrong to do.
But don't you think that maybe when you aren't around to administer that consequence, that they might just go ahead and do it anyway?
No, because I taught them from a very young age that this issues like that cause pain.
Taught or intimidated?
The Bible talks about train up a child in the way it should go. That way, when they are older, they don't depart from the way as you did.
I wish, sir, in fact, that I departed from the way because my father didn't beat me.
I think that's really an arrogant statement of you.
I departed from the way because my father didn't
beat me.
We
departed from the way we should have gone.
I've got to get to work and make some money, so I'll talk to you later. Bye.
I think that's just really,
cheers,
really remarkable to make those gross assumptions about total strangers that we're not following the way that we were meant to follow.
I just got to point out in the last 40 seconds we have left that we have either fallen from the path because our fathers either did or didn't beat us.
Mm-hmm.
Both claims were asserted in that amazing 10-minute exchange.
That's called circular reasoning for those listeners who haven't experienced it
wowzers
before. That was a really great example of it, I do believe.
Good morning, everyone, one and all. I hope to see everyone Sunday, Waterfront Park, a gathering for peace, 1:30 p.m., Waterfront Park. There's going to be a contingent leaving from KABU and heading over together with some solidarity and camaraderie. If you choose to meet here, do be here by 12:30. Doors open at KABU at noon, Sunday. Big peace march and rally.
Let's all be positively revolting together.
For more information, you can always call the KABU front desk, 503-231-8032, right about now. Thanks.